is Nicole Whitney, News for the Soul, life-changing talk radio from the uplifting to the unexplained.
News for the Soul is now in its 25th year of broadcasting. Tune in live or visit the archives at newsforthesoul.com. That's newsforthesoul.com.
Next on News for the Soul, Transformational Learning with Diane Hill. Diane is a member of the Bear Clan of the Mohawk Nation, situated at the Six Nations of the Grand River Territory in Ontario. Diane works as an integrative programs consultant and administrates the Real School Leadership Program and runs a private healing lodge and learning center focusing on fostering emergence. Her teachings integrate an indigenous worldview and with discoveries drawn from the quantum sciences, bridging the Western allopathic scientific perspective and the ancient indigenous multidimensional approach to wholeness. Please welcome back Diane Hill to News for the Soul.
Hi, good afternoon, everyone. I'm really excited about today's show because I have a new guest, and that guest goes by the name of Doug George. And Doug George is an Ojibwe Lynx Clan gentleman, and he's been a long time a student of Native traditional healing practices and Indigenous knowledge systems according to the Anishinaabe traditions. Doug also works as a director of the health center, which oversees and provides services, health services, to his home community at the Kettle and Stony Point First Nation. So I'd like to welcome Doug George to today's show. Are you there, Doug?
Oh, yes, I am. Thank you very much.
Doug, I'm so happy that you could join us today on today's show. And what I'm interested in, the topic I wanted to focus on today was about some of your background in traditional healing and your knowledge of traditional healing, and then how you might interface that or how does it bridge or connect to some of the work that you're doing in a more modern context in terms of the, I guess we would say, the allopathic Western health service tradition versus the Anishinaabe kind of holistic healing practices. And I'm just wondering how you're bridging those two in your practices and today and in your work today. But maybe we might start off before we get right into that. Could you comment a bit about some of your background, share a little bit about your background in terms of your traditional knowledge and your study or your practice there?
Oh, yes, sure. Bonjour, everybody. My name is Shawin Ibanez. I come from a community, and our language, we call it Wiyokwedong, which is a Kettle and Stony Point First Nation in Southwest Ontario, Canada. And I grew up in a very different time in a different, very different world. I grew up at a time when our people still spoke a lot of elders in our community. I basically hung out with a lot of elders, and because my mom used to take me around to various different family members and I've seen quite a different world in which they used traditional medicines yet. There was no welfare, I guess, programs at that particular time. So people had to, if they didn't go work, they had to, hunt and fish off the land. So we ate a lot of fish right out of the lake, fresh fish. We ate a lot of deer meat and so, you know, like all the sustenance that comes from our Mother Earth was also provided to us in a natural way. And we learned about those as we were growing up and to give thanks for all of that at that particular time. So in growing up in that particular system, there was also a terminology which we called Ma Doki Wen, in which our ancestors at that particular time didn't hoard everything to themselves because they knew that everybody, the whole system, everybody within the whole community, many families put together, some of them didn't have somebody like a man in the house to, you know, like to go out on the land and to get some of those those things that other people were lucky enough to have. So what they did was they made sure they took care of, you know, especially our elders and their seniors in their community and those people with very large families, young children. So that was, you know, like people called me poor at that particular time. They were saying that I was very poor. I didn't know that. I didn't know the concept of what poor meant. I thought, you know, like, wow, when I look back on that, I was actually very rich. It wasn't until later that I learned about the concept of poverty, you know, like within the Western terminology. Also, because I heard a lot of the language being spoken when I was a child, I was able to connect that. But circumstances being, I was caught up in the 60s scoop at that particular time, in which the government of Canada shifted gears from the residential school where they took thousands of children away from the community. But my father was taken into the residential school system. But in my time, I was born in the 60s when the social service system started coming into the communities. Okay. And so I got caught up into the 60s scoop. And I was taken away from my community at that time. And I ended up in a multitude of foster care homes, and including non-Indigenous foster care systems. So I got to see the life ways or the lifestyles of many different people. I had to go to different denominations of churches, you know, like on Sunday. Some of them were very strict in terms of their worship at church and going, you know, like sometimes three or more times a day, you know, like on Sunday. So I was able to see that. I also grew up with for a certain time with a very kind German Mennonite family, you know, like from our near Toronto area. So
how old were you, Doug, when the government people took you out of your home?
I was just finishing kindergarten at that time. So I think I was probably about 5 years old before I entered foster system on reserve. And then when I was taken away off reserve, I was probably, I think I remember, about 7 years old. And I returned back to the community when I was about 11 years old then, near almost 12 years old. And at that particular time, then I was reintroduced to family systems again and elders. So by this time, I had a different thought process, I think, than most of the peers that I went to school with at public school by then. I was interested in learning more of our knowledge systems that we have available. So I was looking for, like, what do we mean by medicine and healing, you know, like in terms of Indigenous ceremony and philosophy, and, you know, like, who still does that? Where can I learn this? Where can I learn that? How do we still harvest things from the bush? How do we make baskets? You know, like the more traditional ways of doing things. So I was able to ask the number of elders who might not have retained ceremonial aspects of it, but they still held on to a lot of the traditional aspects of harvesting and things like that.
Because they didn't go anywhere, right? They didn't go anywhere. Yeah. You did.
No.
So they remained, hey? Yeah, and you were the one who left and then came back. So they were still living the way that they had lived prior to your being apprehended.
Yes.
So what did you find? What did you find when you went back? What was it that you were looking for when you went back and you said, what's healing? What's medicine? What did you find back there in the community when you started looking for medicine and what healing was about?
Well, what I found was that there's a shift in attitude amongst the people just from being absent from my community for a number of years. And so no longer were people in my age cohort too interested in speaking their own language then. I found a lot of internalized oppression within the community as a result of some of the teachings that people had received through fractions of church groups in terms of classifying our Indigenous knowledge and ways of healing as what they called they called it back then, they called it witchcraft or devil worship. And so there was lots of internalized pressure within our peer group at that time. And so none of my friends were too interested in learning those concepts, but I was. I always had a strong desire for it, and I used to venture into other communities. So when there was a chance for me to accompany somebody to another community where they were talking to other elders, I would always try to tag along if I could, if they would take me at that particular age, so that I could. I was always very interested. I just wanted to learn more. So there was a waning, I think, of the indigenous spiritual process at that time. So I started seeing the fluctuation and the change as time went on. And then later, in later in life, what I had to do was they program you into this belief system that there's a process in life and you have to do this first and you have to do this first. You know, like you have to be industrious, you have to go get a job, you have to go to school. And so I had to go through the whole process. Now, it wasn't too bad because I liked school myself.
Yeah. So, but what did you learn in terms of the traditional medicines? Like what was your highlights there that you found in spite of all those changes? What did you find?
Yeah, so what I found with the traditional medicines was that there is a still intact within our communities, a spiritual way of healing, and a lot of that had to do with holistic healing, which I was just speaking to somebody earlier on about our own pharmacology, I guess, within indigenous culture and how my grandma, how when everybody, especially her daughters, were going through a hard time, they would go always go to my grandma's house. So and my grandma, in her way, she used to make her own dresses, and she had the apron. She had a wood stove, which she learned to cook on, and the indoor stove, and that's what she preferred. She had an electric stove, but she preferred the wood stove. She would always go to the wood stove and prepare, boiling water. And then she would calmly sit down, listening to her daughters crying. Mm-hmm. And then she would open up a little package out of her apron, and she would make them tea. And so me, I was, if you want to talk about indigenous science practice, approaches, I guess I was sitting there all this time observing and watching.
Hello?
This one looks like they're, and so what she did was she had them drink this tea, and so I learned from that process that this particular tea was good for people who were suffering from anxiety, or they were having depressive. Mm-hmm. Certain aspects of medicines which were good for mental health issues, and then we had this whole spiritual aspect also. So there was a common belief that you can't, you have to live your way, your life in accordance with the environment you lived in, and you had to have respect for the environment you lived in. And if you didn't respect the environment you lived in, then you could offend some of the spirits that looked after all of life on the land. So there's a belief system within our culture that there's leader spirits there, and so we have to make sure that we always pay them homage and respect all the time. We can't just take and take and take and take from the land, right? So, because if the land suffers, they already had the concept and the philosophy and the teachings back then that if our land suffers or Mother Earth suffers, then we suffer too. So as we inflict pain and suffering on our mother, then we do the same to ourselves. So they already had that concept there. And so I grew up with those medicines and teachings on some of the proper ceremonies that we have to do in order to appease those spirits and I think people might have heard of the terminology. I think it comes from maybe Eastern philosophies of kind of like what goes around comes around.
Mm-hmm.
So we have a very similar concept that if you make anything suffer, any life form suffer within on the earth, then you might have to do a ceremony, for that to appease, the spiritual leaders of that particular life force that you may suffer. So we call that, there's the various different names I heard, but the one that I grew up with is called Onchinewin. Onchinewin means that the same suffering or the same sickness that you inflicted on somebody else has come back to you now. And the only way that you're going to get better is you have to remember what you did. And through that remembering what you did is you have to go through and you have to process some of the pain out of your body that you're feeling or however that suffering has been inflicted on you. And then you might have to make amends, with the natural forces in nature. Eh? So there was that aspect. So that was a spiritual nature also, and also learning on, we call them Atsokanag. So that Atsokanag is what we call certain spiritual entities that are leaders or bosses within the concepts of our culture. And so we learn about those at a very young age, and we have to be respectful.
Wow.
Yeah, and we learn about which medicines we have to pick, which, what we have to do in order to appease those spirits and what kind of ceremonies we have to do. Eh? And
So you're basically working with light and dark energies, what people would refer to as light and dark energies, eh?
Yes, but I never learned at a young age. I never had the concept that it was good and evil. So I never heard that concept of good and evil until I started going to the church groups.
It was just something that was there that needed attention. Yeah. The dark side was something that was there that needed attention. That's cool.
Yes, because it was the understanding within our ancestors, anyways, that knew about these forces. It was that there were forces above and there's also forces below, but somehow that got intertwined, I think, within the belief systems of Christianity, which is really predominant, within a lot of our First Nations communities in Canada right now. But I was talking to a social worker who is also a very devout Catholic that particular teaching, Catholicism, and she was a very devout believer in that. But she was also a very devout believer that the Indigenous people really need to pick up their practices again, type of thing, right? And so she was trying to protect us this one time from a dean of one of the faculties, and saying that she was telling him that we were coming to do a speech at one of the local colleges where I live, and that we needed to cover up all the statues of the angels and things like that because we thought that they were evil.
I said we just
had to do some recovery work from that, some teaching. So that happened, I suppose, for a reason and a purpose, as everything usually does in life. And so it was an opportunity to provide teachings with that. And we're saying, people who know anything about true spirituality, which is really highly embedded within love and kindness, wouldn't go about and promote the opposite, like hate. Yes, we heard that there is a man named Jesus, type of thing, or other people might call Jesus another, but that was another force, that was going through that needs to be respected also, right? Many of our own people had accepted those concepts at that time. The only problem was the church had left the people years ago, but the force that they left behind didn't leave. And so this leaves our communities in a state right now with this, not only this internalized oppression, but it leaves them in a state now where they believe that they're, I guess living or enforcing the rules of God, but what they're really doing is they're promoting a really heavy dark energy, which is working opposite love and kindness, right? Because for them, anything but this particular teaching is evil, and so that force has remained hot, by and large, very heavy within our communities, and so that's changed my concept now. You know, like later in life, so now here I am. So I was taken away from the community at 5 years old. Went through this whole process, returned to my community. I got mad at my community when I was about, I went to other communities, Six Nations. I seen another culture there. And then I started getting angry in my community, and I left my community. I ran away to what I thought was very far away. It only turned out that I went to Thunder Bay in Canada, and I thought I was running way far away in my, you know, like in my concept, but it was there. I ended up there.
Well, it is
for
from Kettle Point.
Yeah.
It's over 20 hours drive, I'd say, pretty far.
Yeah. Yes, it is. And I thought I was going there to go to school, and I ended up meeting some very dear good friends from up in the Kenora Lake of the Woods area, who mm-hmm. are very kind people, very kind individuals. So it's the first time I've seen people act in such a very kind way, and they walked me through more of the spirituality on a deeper healing level.
Well, did those people go to residential school? So people you found in the Lake of the Woods, did they have that experience the way that our people did in the South? That family you met in Lake of the Woods?
Yes, the ones that I came into contact with, they didn't. However, that doesn't mean that the residential schools didn't exist there. They did take me on one of the islands where many people were taken to residential school. So one community had many of the children taken away to residential school. So if you go to that community today, not too many people know their own indigenous spirituality. When right across the lake from there, those children were by and large protected from going to that residential school. And because they were protected, there were many, many strong spiritual leaders that are still active in that community to this day.
So those were the people that you were involved with then, the ones that didn't go to residential school?
Yeah.
So what did you come away with from there in terms of in your indigenous knowledge? Did you learn to speak Ojibwe
spoke more
Ojibwe?
Yes, it was a different dialect than from where I'm from. So where I'm from, we have a mixture of what's called the Ojibwe Potawatomi. So that's two different nations. So they came together and the languages blended. And so our languages also drop vowels, which makes it a little bit more, sometimes it's a little bit harder for people who speak just Ojibwe to understand that process. It's called syncopation, I think, in linguistics terms. But up there, they didn't drop the vowels. And so what I had to do was I had to relearn, they call it the Border Lakes dialect of the language. And so nobody spoke. It was like going back in time again. So, this time I'm in an adult body. So it was like going back and dropping back in time. They were still breaking the ice and dipping buckets into the lake in the wintertime in order to have drinking water, bathing water. So
still living off the land then, wow.
Still living off the land, yes, and hunting and still gathering yet. And so for me, they thought they were going to shock me. They were used to people coming into their communities who weren't used to living like that. There was still no infrastructure, no hydro. And so when I went there, that's how I grew up at a very young age, right? So this is, I remember all this, it all came back to me. And so it didn't bother me. As a matter of fact, I went, wow. You know, like this reminds me of when I was a child, right? And And so I remembered, you know, like I was going, like, you people here in this community, you're so rich, you're so wealthy. And they're saying, what do you mean by that? I'm saying, you have so much knowledge, and you're so connected to so much knowledge and spirit in this community. And it's something that I used to see in our community, but no longer exists because of you know, like some of the internalized oppression. So I said, now the people where I'm from, we do it to ourselves. So we don't need anybody else to oppress us anymore. We do it to ourselves.
Yeah, said, that's so, right. We talked about that in another show a little bit. So yeah, understood.
Yeah, and so when I learned about that, I learned the biggest thing I picked up from there is learned all about what we call Schwentjegewin, or love and kindness, right? But all the spiritual teachings. So when we go about and we're interacting with the world and we're interacting with each other, this is the way you treat your brothers and sisters. This is the way you treat them. You're like, no matter where they're from in the world, you treat them with love and kindness. We don't judge people. You know, like they were teaching me all of these things. I'm going, and not only, it's almost like they were preaching a little bit, but not in a sense of Christianity. It's called the Nishtabe, they call it the Kogikwewanan, right? So they're providing instruction. Daily instruction, because of course, if you know anything about indigenous languages in Canada and the United States, they're based on oral tradition. So they're very complex languages, and so within those the complexity of our oral traditions, there's teachings embedded right in the language itself, right?
Once I started learning,
so I'll take the word for happiness. So happiness is Minnewanaguzwin, right? And also the word for what they did was they picked that word for happiness, and so they said, where do our people go when they pass away? They go to Minnewanaguzwin, which is sort of like the place of happiness.
Yes, exactly.
So I'm going like this. I'm thinking, well, what does that mean? Is you mean everybody's just having happiness? And they said, no. They said, so if you understand the traditional or spiritual inferences that are embedded within one little word, it means that when you balance yourself physically, mentally, spiritually, and emotionally, and you're connected, you go to the interconnection with all things, then you enter a state of Minnewanaguzwin, which means that you are happy. And so you're in vibration, you're in tune with all things.
Yeah,
and
you're in tune with the creation.
You're in tune with all creation, right?
Yeah.
And I said, wow.
So how does that work? When you're in a modern health center, like in your community, because, you know, I'm just aware of the time, so I'm just going to go into a little bit around how did that, just that concept alone, how does that bridge into your work in a modern health center as a health director in Western medicine, kind of mainstream approaches? How does that work?
The word that comes up immediately is very, well, challenging. You know, like throw an adjective on there, very challenging. And that's because if you know anything about the allopathic medical system model, doctors have incredible power when it comes to healing and wellness within the context of Canada. As a matter of fact, there are special committees that are out there that continuously attack anything that's not accepted by the allopathic model. And so they try to attack indigenous concepts of healing and wellness also. And so that's one aspect, we're having to push back now, right? So we learn, you know, like, sorry?
Sorry.
Go ahead.
Yeah. But so you're saying that you have doctors in your community who actually don't support concepts because they don't know, or they just are so stubborn, or they're so bent on pushing their own knowledge and practices that they don't even acknowledge or take the time to learn anything else. Is that what you mean by the power?
Well, all
that
of that.
I think there are,
well, that's kind of the general term of the doctors, but doctors, I've met doctors who do believe in concepts of spirituality, but they are not allowed to practice that in their practice, you know, like the family medicine practice. So they keep that hidden. It's hidden, and they can't. And the reason why is they're working within the concepts of a very powerful organization who can make life very miserable for them at that time.
Right.
And we have other doctors who just don't believe in anything spiritual at all. So seeing is believing. If it's not embedded within the scientist practitioner model, then I have no time for it. I want nothing to do with it. Those concepts there. So
that must be very challenging to you, who knows a completely different way. Right, an approach, and you know the difference, like the values of happiness, let's say, right, to balance yourself and be in connection with creation, and then to the creation then achieve balance through the pharmacology, through the traditional medicines. So you know all of this, and yet you have to work in a community that prefers doctors. Is that right?
Yes, that's right. And the reason why they prefer doctors is because, like I said, by and large, many of them are still afraid, or they're taught to be afraid of their own ways and means of healing and wellness, which is very powerful. It's a very profound and very powerful concept. But it's like working in the community, in the health center, you know, like even myself, I have to go by these policies and procedures, which are elusive. They're not grounded in natural law, which we call inokmegewin. So in my mind, you know, like I know about natural law. So even when lawyers enter the picture, I'm going, well, you're, the law that you practice is not natural law, right? Because because natural law are within the forces of nature, and if Mother Nature wants to whip your behind, you'll know it. You know, that's what I mean. When I was young, I learned very quickly about the processes of Chinookmegewin, or natural law within the universe. And so I'm working by and large with people who are not aware of this whole process. They continue to ignore spiritual culture, but through lots of prayer, lots of self-healing, I think, because I have to watch the way that I outwardly judge all of the people, because I can't get mad at them because they're only living their life by the way that they think is right, kind of thing, right? And so
exactly,
unfortunately, I'm going to say this, unfortunately, with many of our communities where you have very stronghold elders who really control a lot of what goes on in the community, when they pass away, it's almost like that single individual who held all the strings within family systems. It's almost like nobody takes that over. So there's a sense of freedom amongst a lot of people to start exploring into those other ways that originally belonged to their ancestors, because now they don't have this this belief system that they may disappoint their grandpa or their grandma, you know, like by asking questions and participating.
Okay.
So right
now, it's changing.
So many people right now, like me, have had to leave the community and travel very long distances in order to participate in anything like that right now. So, you know, and so these things are some of the things that we're talking about in terms of, you know, like the truth and reconciliation talk in Canada right now. We had a, I was at a meeting not too long ago with a traditional elder hospital was asking about concepts about how can we respect and honor some of the cultural practices within our system. I don't know how that's going to work, but at least they're going to try. But it was it didn't come from the hospital, but one of our own people in the meeting said, well, not everybody within Indigenous communities is a traditional person. Some of us go to church. And so one of the elders spoke up and said with a very stern voice, usually they speak with kindness, but this one had a stern voice, and he said, stop it. You must stop that right now. So every time that you make a decision to move over and drop your own tradition, your spirituality, and your own culture to make somebody else or somebody else's culture comfortable, then you yourself are participating in the oppression of your own. They said, she was pointed out, she says, there are different buildings on almost every street corner where they can go and they can learn, about those things that they want to learn about. But your spirituality is hanging on a very thin thread. And it's important at this time that you quit that. You take back your power and you stand your ground and you heal the way that you want to heal, So use what your ancestors gave you. So she was in her way scolding people and bringing it to light that quite often that's what we'll do. We'll move out of the way to make others comfortable. And so bringing it to light that, we're sacrificing our own ways and means of healing in order to do that. And we have to stop that now because now it's time that we look after ourselves and each other in that process. And so I think out of all that, once we do that, then we're going to have the ability to also share that with other people around the world because once you expand your knowledge systems and you start to meet people from elsewhere in the world, I think one of the things that was brought to my attention in my talks with people was that our language holds keys to spirituality, which means that we hold the keys to spirit, in terms of what was handed down to us by our ancestors. And so many people, including some of the Europeans, some people from Scotland, I've met people from Scotland and people from Britain, et cetera, and if they explore their roots deep enough, they'll find out that they come from land-based cultures also. And they, at one time, had very, very similar belief systems as Indigenous people in Canada. They believed in entities and healing and plants and medicines and things. And I think that's a lot of things that are missing out of their lives. And I think their spirit is aware of that. Their spirit knows that there's something missing that their ancestors used to do. And that was that's that connection to our mother, the earth, and their ancestral lines, right?
So you're seeing more of non-native people being more open. That's kind of how I took what you just said, that they're kind of opening up to their spirituality more than ever before, which gives an opening, I guess, or an opportunity for Indigenous people to teach them and bring them back, help them to remember who they are from their ancestry.
Yes, that's and so that's what I'm noticing. So we have a lot of non-Indigenous people that are approaching Indigenous people, and they're seeking to find these. Well, they think they can first of all, they think they can go to First Nation, and everybody on a First Nation is going to be very spiritual people. Of course, we know that's not true. It's not true at all. So depending on which community you go to, you're going to see that probably some of our communities actually live a lot wealthier than people in the city. So they live in very nice, luxurious homes. And people are looking, some people still come to my community and say, how come nobody lives in wigwams? And I said, I don't know. I said, first of all, we never had wigwams, you know, like in our particular area. We lived in bark huts, and like in the bush, we were woodland people. We didn't have teepees. That's the Plains. That's our Plains brothers and sisters. And, you know, so, but I said, today, you know, like our, a lot of our people have been forced to live in communities, and so we adapted, eh? And so we have to adapt to whatever whatever we're given. And so we're still kind of living in that state of mindset at this time. And we've been taught sometimes to be very afraid of non-Indigenous people. So I think once we start our healing processes within our community, that will start catching on, and that we can open up that and invite other people in and lead the way. I think there's a lot of our people now across Canada and the United States who are have that ability to do that. You know, like they have the message that needs to be given to people around the world, those ones that want to listen. And so there's an approach that needs to happen very, very soon with regards to healing. So we see how our Mother Earth is responding. So what we see happening around the Earth is the way we are as people, and collectively, right? So there's lots of sickness collectively around the Earth with human beings. And
there's a lot of upheavals too. There's a lot of like they would say on the Earth, there's a lot of earthquakes and volcanic activity, lots of explosions and that kind of thing, right? They're saying
which is
you're saying is directly connected to how human beings are being right now, how they're behaving and how they're conducting their lives.
Yeah, that's right. And so within our cultural teachings, you know, like the Earth really doesn't need human beings, but and so the Earth itself had agreed to host human beings here and to look after them and to provide them with life and sustenance. Eh? And it was our job to give thanks and to make sure we honor and respect and those. I call them original treaties. Eh? So their original spiritual treaties were negotiated. And so when we were set down, our teachings, no matter which Indigenous group you go to, nobody said we were set down in Europe or China or, you know, all of our original teachings talk about how we were set down here on this side of the Earth on Turtle Island.
Yeah, the back of a giant turtle, yes.
The back of a giant turtle with creation stories that are connected to that.
Right.
And, yeah, so everybody
so
needs to connect to the creation stories.
Yeah, exactly. I agree. And so in your community now, with the loss of all these ways and with the influx of another way of doing medicine and another way of treating the people, what are the health conditions in your community right now? What are you seeing there?
Well, somebody asked me that question not too long ago. I think within the last month or so, they said, what is the, so if you had to rate the wellness of your community on the, you know, like on a percentage scale up to 100%, where would you put it at? And I said 10. And I said, their eyes went up. They were from another group, but they said 10. Why do you give it that? And I said, well, I said, because everything has changed. All aspects of our life have changed. And so, we've got a small aspect of our culture that's still honoring our spirituality and traditions. But by and large, if you take a look at many of our brothers and sisters within our communities, they're suffering in their minds, they're suffering in their bodies. Cancer rates are very high. Diabetes is very high. Obesity is very high. And so a lot of our people are being judged for this, but, you know, like a lot of people are still living in poverty. You know, like you look at the cost of food, you know, like many of our people can't get to a gym, let alone pay money for gym memberships and, you know, like and to go to the store to be able to eat, you know, like nice fresh fruit and vegetables because they forgot how to plant. in the garden, mm-hmm. like their ancestors did. When I was young, everybody had a garden, but the young ones now that are coming up, they don't know how to do that anymore.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah, so they don't.
So, yes. So, in your opinion, would you say that? Because I've heard this a lot. People would say, well, if our people could get back, if Native people could just get to learning their traditional ways and their traditional language, we could turn around our negative health statistics. We could make a great deal of improvement. Do you believe that?
Somewhat. I would say that would contribute to it greatly. I think people have to, you know, like the there was a blend of spirituality when I was a child. Also, I remember that there were churches, there were grandma and grandpas who used to go to church, but then they would do ceremony mm-hmm. at home. Nobody judged them. Nobody judged each other. It doesn't matter. It didn't matter what you believed at that time. You know, like if you needed help, people would come to help you. But it's not the same today. So it's whatever shift happened around the world, it's affected many people. So that concept it doesn't just stop at First Nation boundaries. It goes right across to all communities across Canada. You know, like so you see people who are so far removed from their spirit and their spirit that they're highly dependent. You know, like on what we have out there in society right now, right? So, and highly dependent means that they don't know how to get out of that either. How do you train people like who are at such a low state of mental wellness? You know, they're almost to the point where you know, like it's they're going into depression, and you know, like and so. And feelings of worthlessness, et cetera. And so what do? They go to the next best thing, and that's to escape, right? And so we were talking about this earlier here when I was having a conversation. So when people try to escape, they use other substances to do that, such as the opioid crises that we're having everywhere. That's not just First Nations. That's not everywhere. So there's something going on, you know, like, yeah, everywhere, worldwide, which are disconnecting people totally from their whole being. They don't feel whole anymore, and so through the connection of our culture and our languages, and in addition to doing some of that healing work on itself, then there is it's all about reconnection, and making oneself whole again. So when you're whole. When you're whole, you know, like you can start connecting to other whole people again. And so as people start doing that collectively, then the earth starts to heal itself again. So the people are looking for these very far out ways to heal the earth when they're looking everywhere outside of themselves. But the key is that everybody, every individual, no matter where you come from, no matter what belief system you have, you have to start going into the self, and you have to start pulling the pieces back together to make you whole.
And some people would say to remember that you're whole, because sometimes because the spirit has not really been broken. But where the concept comes forward is that some people think they're broken because they're suffering mentally, emotionally, physically, but spiritually they're still whole. There's still that energy there that they need to reconnect to. That's kind of what I hear you saying. And if we can remember that we're who we are, and that we're these powerful spiritual beings, and then we can use that understanding to help us to heal and help us to shift and reconnect that whole self, the holistic health you were talking about. So you know what, Doug, we're coming to the end of our time, and I think we're just scratching on the surface, so I'm probably going to have to ask you to come back for another show if you're up for it. Because one of the topics that came to my awareness while we're chatting here today is that there are a lot of Native people who have learned Native language, they've learned culture, they've learned practices and ceremonies, but they're not whole. Like they're still suffering in some way. So, I think I'd like to pick up that topic if you're in agreement and you're available in 2 weeks' time in the next show, that we delve into that topic of how people can learn their culture, learn their language, and take that journey back to traditional ways, indigenous knowledge, and still be sick. I think that's another topic where we can maybe explore that one if you're up for it. In 2 weeks' time. Do you think you could do that and come back in 2 weeks' time?
I might be able to. I'll get back to you on that. I'd like to talk about it because it is something that needs to be talked about.
I agree.
In terms of that, yeah. So and it just goes the same with, many spiritual leaders out there. So we have lots of people who are considered spiritual leaders, but they're not whole. And we can see that.
Exactly. Yeah, so let's do that. Let's in 2 weeks' time, we'll come back and we'll start off with, we'll pick up from where we left off here today. But right now, there's a few minutes left in the program, and this is the moment where we come into the segment of the program where we do shameless self-promotion. So one of the things that I wanted to promote was, and I'm happy, I was kind of holding back on it, but I'm happy to say that we finally got, my son and I, Jordan, we finally got to a place where we're able to receive delivery of a 30-foot yurt, 30-foot diameter yurt. It's a circular construction of canvas. And our primary goal is to make that yurt into a classroom where we can start to teach and promote and to talk about wholeness and wellness in a classroom setting through the yurt, but also inviting people to come and join us in a land-based experience out on the property here at Six Nations. So I just wanted the audience, the listening audience, to know that these issues that we're talking about and that I, with the guests on my show, that we are looking to do our part, and part of that is to offer classes and offer teachings and offer experiences to people of all cultures to come and learn, because I really think we're all in this together. So the more we can reconnect people to their wholeness and to their spirit, I think the better off we're all going to be in the end. So I want to thank you, Doug George, Shawnee Benes, for coming on the show today. And I'm just going to we'll see you in 2 weeks' time, and we'll pick up that discussion, because I really think it's important that we talk about how you can learn language and culture and still not be well. Thank you very much, Doug. We'll talk to you soon. Bye-bye.
Thank you. Goodbye.
Hear all of our previously aired broadcasts of News for the Soul online at newsforthesoul.com. Now let's get back to the show.